All right, you're now tuned in to the Follow Through with Clips and Drew, the True Players Podcast, episode 320. Kawhi is back, but Luka spoils his homecoming. The Suns are playing struggle ball and down 0-2 to the Minnesota Timberwolves. What is happening with the referees right now? The 76ers got hosed against the Knicks. The Pacers tied up against the Bucks. Nobody cares about Cleveland and Orlando. And the Joker's doing commercials now? It's the Follow Through with Clips and Drew. Drew, give me some intro music. Up, podcast world.
What's up, everybody?
You know what it is. You know where you're at. It's the Follow Through with Clips and Drew, the True Players Podcast, episode 320. We got a bunch of playoff games to go over, Drew, but thank God Clipper Nation is happy. Your boy Clips is happy finally after 4 weeks of no Kawhi Leonard. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? He doesn't play game one. Kawhi Leonard was a game time decision for game two. I played the hallelujah music on our page, just knowing that Kawhi Leonard was going to be playing in this game. And he hasn't played since March 31st due to the knee inflammation and whatnot, but he was ready to go before game two. We were all extremely happy about it, especially if the Clippers were going to come out and play the same kind of game that we played in game one to get that victory. But that just did not happen. And Drew, before we get into the Clippers, I want to bring up the craziest fact that I heard before the game even started. And I was doing some work on my laptop while I was listening to the pregame with Brian Seaman, because I didn't, whenever the Clippers are on Bally's, I'm watching Bally's. I'm watching the home court game. I'm not listening right to TNT or ESPN. I prefer my home court guys. And I'm doing some work, and Brian Seaman says something that I had to rewind and listen to again because I didn't think I heard it properly. That game, game two, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George were playing in their first playoff game together in front of the Clippers home crowd, in front of fans. Wow. First time in all of their years of playing, 5 years, this was their first. And I'm like, wait, what? That cannot be true. 2020 doesn't count because of COVID, right? And then they've been injured, both of them. They have never played in front of the home crowd together. And I was just absolutely shocked. Look, Clippers took an L last night. Luka was phenomenal. The Mavericks tied the series 1-1. They're going back to Dallas. Luka had a big game, which was expected, 32-9-6. Kyrie followed with a great game, 23-6-3, added three steals. The Mavs definitely came out with a different defensive mindset. They had a game plan to get Zoo out of the game early, and that's exactly what they did. Big Zoo got two fouls early. He was out of the first quarter with 9:30 left to go in the first quarter. Definitely threw a wrench. We had to bring in Plum Dog Millionaire early to play, and that was just, you know, a little too early for Plum, which, you know, he's not used to coming in that early. Kawhi looked definitely rusty, as expected. He hasn't played in a month. He was short on his jumpers. He was 0 for 5 from 3. I thought defensively he looked fine. PG also got in foul trouble early, which, again, threw a wrench in everything. But Dallas looked like a completely different team coming into this game. And they were swarming on defense. They were highly aggressive on the perimeter. They were highly aggressive in the paint. Our bigs, Zoo and Plum, in the first half were 1 for 7 on layups. You know what I mean? Like, they were shook in the paint. I just thought Dallas came out with a totally different mindset. And PG as well. Like, our guys did not play great. PG or Kawhi had 15. PG had 22. He was 7 for 14 from the field, 2 for 5 from threes. And same thing with James, 22 points, 6 for 14 from the floor, but 2 for 10 from three. And look, we didn't, it was a horrible shooting game for us. And the fact that we only lost by three was, you know, a testament to, like, okay, these guys played a great game. We played a horrible game. We're still in this game. A couple quick takeaways from that before we dissect this is, you know, PJ Washington, who did not play well in game one, he had really big corner threes in this game. Like, right when we're tying the game or we're going up one, PJ hit a three from the corner, a shot that he didn't hit the game before. I thought he played really well. Obviously, we're going to talk about Luka and how great he was. But one more thing I want to bring about the Clippers is Russell Westbrook. One more time. I said this guy was going to be an X factor. Every time he came in that game last night, everything switched. Energy switched. You know, we were down six. Immediately when he comes in, we tie the game up. There's just something about Russell. And yes, he missed layups and had a couple turnovers. It's standard for Russ. But I think he needed more minutes last night. We didn't get enough from Terrence Mann. I think T-Man had 5 points in that game. Norm had a couple big threes, but wasn't great. It was just a blah kind of game. But I think the main factor is we got Kawhi back. Hopefully this game will knock off some rust and we go into Dallas for game three, ready to rock and roll. What was your take, Drew?
Yeah, it really, to me, this came down to shooting. I mean, you did a good job of kind of outlining the things that went wrong for the Clippers, but this was just a really poor shooting night for you guys. 0-for-5 from Kawhi from three. That's not going to happen too many times. No. I can't remember the last time he went 0-for and taken, you know, when he's taken at least five threes. He doesn't shoot that many threes. Sometimes it's, you know, maybe it's only two or three that he takes. But, you know, it just, he was off. And I think that's fair, right? Coming back from all those weeks off. Yeah. Pretty normal. The biggest problem to me was James Harden, who had a really awesome shooting night in game one, and it just wasn't falling for him in game two. And this happens, right? This happens in the postseason sometimes. It just gets, you know, you think you got it going, and all of a sudden you're 2-for-10 from three. Most of those looks were pretty good. Some of them were pretty tough step backs, as, you know, James Harden gets into from time to time. But like those two guys being 2-for-15 from three is the difference in this game. Obviously, there was also a nice course correction from Dallas on how to defend Zubats, alongside him kind of missing the shots that he was draining in game one. So to me, this was a continuation of what we saw in the second half of game one play out for the entirety of a full game two, where it was really competitive back and forth. Super physical, which is a trend that we've been seeing throughout the postseason and, you know, in these playoffs. Yeah. Like the refs are really, really swallowing their whistles right now across the whole board. But I think the biggest standout performance in this game is a guy you talked about. It's PJ Washington, right? Because Luka and Kyrie, you know, kind of did their thing. Kyrie didn't have as efficient of a night scoring as he did in game one. In game two, but Luka was almost identical in game one and two, and was hitting huge shots, including that massive three-pointer towards the end of regulation that was really important. But yeah, having Zoo go from like 20 points down to 13, that's a big drop there. And then having PJ, you know, essentially double his productivity for the Dallas Mavericks was really the major difference maker outside of the three-point shot. And also within that, Russ, while the energy was all over the place and he was doing a lot of positive things, was also 2-of-9. So I think he was taking some pretty tough shots at times. And those one-handed layups, bro, I've never, ever understood in my entire life why a man who doesn't have the size hands of Kawhi Leonard that can palm a basketball like it's a softball would ever go to the rack with a one-handed layup when you have your left hand right there. He's done it for, I think, virtually his whole career. It just blows my mind that every time he does it, it's almost never successful. So I just don't understand what he's thinking on that. Just use both your hands. You have two hands. Put both hands on the ball.
Hold the rock. Everything is like trying to be jelly. And like I'm screaming at the TV and also like try to bang out on the dude. You know what's wild?
Right.
Is PG said, like, I can't palm a basketball. Obviously, Russell Westbrook can't palm a basketball, but he's going so fast, man. And I think that he's trying to get that foul every time, and it's just not working. And I would even like him to go off 2 feet. He's way more in control off 2 feet. But yes, it happens every night. It's blown layups. It's trying to get the foul, and it just has not been working, man. But again, there was defensive plays that he made where it's like you got to take the good and the bad, right? Like I want Russell in the game to do what these other guys aren't doing, but also it drives you absolutely insane, right? It drives you absolutely insane sometimes. I'm not mad at this game at all, Drew. Like, I'm not mad. There's nothing I blame. Like, I'm, you know, a lot of these games, you could blame the refs or this guy was awful. I thought it was exactly what Jason Kidd said it was. He's like, yo, this was a 90s style basketball game. Both teams were under 100 points, you know, 96 to 93. It could have gone either way. It's just Dallas had an answer for when we made our runs, and the answer is Luka. And look, dude, this guy is absolutely phenomenal. And the crazy stat of the night, dude, is when Luka was the primary defender on Kawhi, on PG, and on James Harden, we were 2 for 17. When Luka, the guy we don't even think about defensively, was stopping, making stops. That's showing me that Luka's actually putting the effort to play really good defense. Now, he had his frustrations and whatnot, but look, the guy hit big-ass shots. He got the shots that he wanted. Kyrie, too. When we were making runs, Kyrie would do a pull-up three and drain it. So they're a really good basketball team, but there wasn't anything glaringly sticking out to me that was like, oh, man, we're not going to win this series. We can beat these guys, dude.
Well, it like I say, that's why the shooting to me is the biggest part. And yes, Luka is doing better on defense. He's performing the best he's ever performed on defense, but it's still not spectacular. I mean, those shots are shots that you guys would normally just make, right? So, because like if you have a normal shooting night, even just a 10% increase, you win the game by 8 or 10, right? And that's to me like a really good sign that the Clippers are very much in this. And while you don't necessarily want to have the series be 1-1 going back to Dallas now, it's also a place that you guys are pretty comfortable with, right? You've won massive games in Dallas before. Getting the rust off of Kawhi now in game two is much better than having to do that in game three or game four. So I think you're just taking, you know, one step closer to, you know, getting the full health and rotation back and having everyone kind of know their minutes, know their spots where they're supposed to come in outside of foul trouble. But I think it's still set up for the Clippers to take this series. And I say all that to say that Luka and Kyrie are very spectacular. Like, and I don't think enough people are, I mean, maybe in the last month or so people were really talking about it because they were coming on so strong, but those guys together are playing really well. They have a really solid understanding of, you know, when to kind of switch off between each other. And okay, Luka needs a breather and Kyrie will go do his thing. But also within the flow of the offense, we know Luka is very unselfish, even though he shoots a lot. He's very willing to fire the rock to whoever is open. And that's how you get, you know, a PJ Washington with 18 points in this game. So it's not going to be an easy task by any means, but if you just look at how the first two games have unfolded, you can see a pretty clear path that the Clippers should be the superior team and should be the winners of the series.
Two quick things. I mean, it basically came down to Dallas just played way better defense. They were extremely active. We said on our YouTube show that if you guys didn't listen to our game one breakdown of both the Lakers and the Clippers, check out the YouTube page. We did a breakdown of both those games. That we really don't want to get into on this one, but their defense was phenomenal. They were extremely active. They brought Josh Green in, which we thought that he would come and get more minutes. He was extremely active, and he's a pest. He's one of those guys, those young guys that likes to run the floor.
He's so fast. That guy's so shot out of a cannon. He's like a sprinting Russell. Everywhere. Yeah.
Right. He's like a mini Russell Westbrook. Do you know we haven't won a game two in the Kawhi PG era either? Like, we have always lost game two. Like, history is just repeating itself, right? Look, I'm just not scared. Clipper, we also have to think about this. Like, Kawhi hadn't even ran a full contact practice at all.
He was huffing and puffing. He was really, especially in that second half, he was bent over, big time breathing, and that's good. You got to stretch the lungs out.
You do, but like, even if you, like, when you haven't played basketball and you just hop right into a playoff atmosphere game, it's got to be difficult for any basketball player, you know? I knew it from the jump that this guy's going to be rusty. Nothing looked right. I thought he was fine defensively. He had a couple big steals and he was active on defense. Like, again, 1-1, this is the playoffs against a really good basketball team. Right now, I'm not worried, though. I want to give me 75% Kawhi in game three and have everybody else focused, make the Ty Lue adjustments, and figure this out. But I do need more from Terrence Mann, and I do need more from Norman Powell. That's what I need. Norman's not getting his easy looks. They're not easy. Anything Norman does is not easy, but he's not getting those quick cuts to the lane for the layup. He's short on his floaters. And I don't know if it's because he's not getting a lot of burn in these games, but I also think at some point, maybe at some point when we're getting eaten up down low, we might need to throw PJ in there for a minute. Like if we go up 10 on these guys or something, like let's throw our fishing line in the water and see what PJ can do for us. And this is me talking about, this is coming from the guy that doesn't want PJ in the game at all. But like when we're getting eaten up like that, we got to try some different things. And again, maybe he's not ready for it, but maybe a Kai Jones in there. These Gafford and Lively, these guys are some springy young cats, and maybe we give it. I haven't even seen Kai Jones. I don't think he's gotten a minute yet, but
no.
I don't think we're not at that point yet to having to bring in Kai. But Clipper Nation, if you're listening to the show, I'm not super worried yet. You got anything more to say about the Clipper game?
No, I think it's a little frustrating. It's got to be a little frustrating for Amir Coffey. Only 11 minutes, almost 12 minutes in that game. He had a really solid performance in game one. And every time you guys trust him, right, and every time you trust him, he seems to perform well, right, when he's thrust into the spotlight. I kind of would lean on him a little bit more. I understand, maybe the matchups and, with the personnel now, Kawhi's back, it's a little difficult to squeeze him in. But especially like when T-Man, for instance, is getting 20 minutes and is just ineffective on all fronts, he's trying really hard on defense, but he only got 2 rebounds. Like, so it's not like he was all over the place defensively. Throw Amir Coffey in that lineup. And then you have a super long switchable, defense, with Harden, Kawhi, PG, and Coffey, and then Zub or Plumlee, whoever the big is. I like that a lot. And I'd like to see a little bit more of that.
Yeah, it's hard when you start game one and you play really well and then you're getting 11 minutes in game two. I think, again, this is a Ty Lue adjustment. It's a 7-game series. Maybe Amir will be getting more. I love Amir Coffey. I think he's come a long way. And like you said, I liked his length on Luka. It's Luka, man. It doesn't matter who you throw at him. It just is what it is. You need to frustrate him and make sure that everybody else is. You can't be giving PJ Washington wide open looks in the corner. But how do you not give him wide open looks when you have to guard Kyrie and Luka? Like, somebody's going to be open at some point. So let's just make some Ty Lue adjustments and figure it out. Clips is not worried right now. Talk to me after game three, which is tomorrow night. The other game I wanted to talk about last night, Drew. One of my favorite things about doing this show, one of my processes when we do this show, is I love to look at my notes. I keep notepads next to, wherever I'm watching the game, and I write down notes of when I'm watching the game. And I'm watching this, the Suns Minnesota game. And the funny thing is like, I write down exactly what's on my mind, how I think it, and I put it on the paper. And it's also like my notes are short. They are scribbled. If you've ever seen my handwriting, 94% of it, you cannot read. It's unreadable. I have four working fingers on this hand. So my handwriting is awful. And what I love to do is in the morning when I rewatch the games or rewatch the highlights, I like to bring my notes out. And in this Phoenix game, Drew, I only had two notes. I had two notes that were written in Sharpie and have an exclamation point next to it. And these are the two notes, Drew. It says, "God damn, these guys need a point guard." Okay. That was the first note to Phoenix. And then the second says, "Struggle ball. Struggle ball." These guys freaking struggle. And these two notes kind of coincide with both of them.
Yeah.
Like, they have to work so hard to get a bucket because there is no set offense. There is no extension of the coach on the floor. This offense is like my turn, your turn. No, it's my turn, three-pointers. When you have a super hyper-aggressive defense like Minnesota, it's just straight anarchy, man. It's anarchy on the floor. And I just don't know how it's going to work out. I think they're at a point where, look, Booker is not a point guard. Bradley Beal is not a point guard. Kevin Durant is not a point guard. Yes, they can all bring up the ball, but they are not point guards. You need somebody to set up these shooters and these stars instead of playing this ISO ball. We know how great all three of these guys are offensively, but there's no cohesion. You know, you brought in Isaiah Thomas, signed him for the rest of the year. He's has playoff experience. I think you need to throw the kid in there, man. This is exactly the time where you wish you had Chris Paul. I know I brought it up a couple times during the year on this show, but look, even a campaign, bro, right? Like even a campaign right now, you need somebody. I don't think this is going to work, man. And you know, the quote of the day yesterday was when they asked Ant, they're like, you know, these guys have KD. And he's like, well, we got Jaden McDaniels. And it's so true. I mean, KD had 18, 6, and shot 40%. McDaniels had 25, 8, and almost shot 60% from the field. Conley was huge. McDaniels was huge. Alexander Walker was huge. These guys got a lot of talent, man. And these guys, DGAF, they really don't care who's in front of them or who they're playing. You know, we saw Ant in game one go against his idol, Kevin Durant. He ain't scared of them. And they're not scared of Devin Booker right now. I think Phoenix is really in trouble, man. And I'm seeing a first round exit. What about you, brother?
Game one was a blowout. 20 point victory for the T-Wolves. Game two felt pretty contentious, and then the third quarter started to get away from the Suns. In the fourth quarter, they put him to bed behind Jaden McDaniels. What a fantastic performance for that guy. Mm-hmm. And what an asset he is to that team, and what a pickup he is, really. I mean, like, for them to hold on – because, you know, they had a lot of trades, right? D'Lo left there, and Conley came, and Patrick Beverley left, and, like, all these things happened, and they held on to that dude. And they must have known – at least somebody must have known – how good McDaniels is, and it's showing up right now. But, you know, Clips, something very interesting about this particular game, game two, is the teams, both the Suns and the T-Wolves, shot exactly 78 shots each, and both made exactly 35 shots each.
Didn't know that.
So they both were identical from the field, which is really interesting. Then, of course, the difference here, which it might be glaring to others. The Suns made one more three than Minnesota made one more three than the Suns did, and they shot a slightly lower percentage. Minnesota did. They were 28%, 9 of 32, and the Suns were 8 of 22. But the glaring difference here is the free throws. And this is where I think a point guard really comes into play here a little bit. Like, Minnesota took 30 free throws. They made 26. Phoenix took 19 free throws. They made 15, and that is the game. That right there is the entirety of the game, is the free throws. When you look at this game in particular, so there's two things there. One, I think fouls mean that defense isn't working very much. Fouls a lot of times mean that you're getting beat off the dribble, or you're trying to recover, and you try and do your best to defend, and you foul somebody because they're getting the best of you. So the Suns' defense is obviously a glaring problem that has been the case for the entire season. And then on the flip side, it means also that you're probably not getting the ball very close to the basket. It means you're probably not driving to the basket enough to get that contact on the way to the rim and get those free throw shots. So this, to me, that was just a very interesting thing that I saw yesterday, last night, as I was looking at the box score. I was like, look at that shit. How often do you see both teams exactly the same percentage from the field? It's not very often. And then for that to be also resulting in a 12-point victory is really, you know, obviously a kind of confusing when you look at it like that. But back to the point guard idea for the Suns, I have to be assuming that they're all regretting trading Chris Paul. And look, I don't know necessarily that Chris Paul would be the savior, right? Because he fractured his hand in Golden State, and he looked old as balls at times for Golden State. But I tell you what, man, he would definitely be helping Devin Booker and Kevin Durant get the ball in the spots that they can, you know, attack. Yeah. And right now, because of the really solid on-ball pressure from Minnesota's defense, whether that be Conley or Ant or McDaniels, they're forcing the offense from the Phoenix Suns to push way further out than they're comfortable with. And they're not able to run their sets. And then you're seeing the shot clock kind of evaporate. And you're like, oh, shit, they got to throw up a really tough contested shot. And look, all three of those guys, Beal, Booker, and Durant, are capable shot makers with the best defense on them. We've seen that time and time again, especially from Durant and Booker. But it is not an easy task when you have really long, athletic defensive players that are giving it their all 100% of the game. So I do think that you know, if they decide to play Isaiah Thomas, fine. Right. I don't know if Isaiah Thomas can save them here.
I'm not saying that. No,
but what I mean is, like, I don't know if there's a point guard that they have on their team or if there's a point guard necessarily in the league right now. I mean, maybe Nikhil Alexander Walker would be a guy that they could go get, because that guy was pretty incredible in that game. But there's not a lot of point guards that can, like, immediately change the situation for them, because it does come back down to the other side of the floor where I started, the defense. If Phoenix isn't able to play good defense, which is a massive problem for them, it doesn't matter where their offense is going, because they're just getting scored on time and time again. And then, of course, it would make the offense easier if they have a point guard to help facilitate. But that point guard has to withstand the pressure that Minnesota is putting on the ball handler. And that's where I think it gets a little tough. I think, you know, all things considered, they would scrap the Bradley Beal trade. You know, hindsight's 20/20. They would have to, I would assume they would want to scrap that trade. And something that came to my mind was, like, you know, if you could do that over again, and instead of keeping Chris Paul and trade Ayton to Toronto for, like, OG Anunoby and, like, yeah, Precious, like that, you know, or Poeltl, like, that's the trade, right? Like, that, if we could go back and wave a magic wand over it, that's how they should do it. But of course, that's neither here nor there. And the Suns, like, you know, do I think they're due for a 130 point outburst, you know, game three or game four? Definitely, because they haven't had an easy go of this, and they are really good shot makers. But I also think that they kind of see the writing on the wall. I don't think there's a lot of belief within the roster, within the squad, that they can actually achieve something here. And I think that shows up a lot in the end of these games.
It's a really good point. And, you know, Jamal Crawford brought up, you know, maybe they should try bringing Beal off the bench and maybe Isaiah Thomas runs the point or something like that. Dude, look, the difference between having three stars like Beal, KD, and Booker, and then having Harden, Kawhi, and PG is Harden can run the point. You know what I mean? Like, he can actually run the point and get buckets and defend. That's the difference. And I don't know, man. It just looked like complete anarchy. When I say struggle ball, even the buckets that they got looked like a complete struggle. They had to work for it. KD had to dribble, 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 step back. You're getting touched. Ants in your dome. Then you get past Ant or whoever else, and you got Rudy freaking Gobert in the paint, or Cat. It's just a lot. I think they're too big. Their bench is not enough. And with Grayson Allen hurting his ankle, and we're talking like Grayson Allen's the savior. He's not the savior, but if we're talking like, yo, Isaiah Thomas and Grayson Allen need to save this Phoenix Suns team, there's not a lot going on for you, dog. You know what I mean?
That's tough. And when you the Suns also had 19 turnovers. So, like, that's obviously a glaring stat that is important as well. That's an obvious one right there. Right. So with a better point guard, one that's better, you know, more comfortable handling the ball, and, you know, facilitating out of that when there's a double, for instance, you assume those turnovers would be dropped tremendously, even by five. And five turnovers gets them five more shots. Right. Maybe that is the difference in the game. Right.
Well, you know, when you have a brand new owner in Ishbia who wants to win now, and he just sees the shiny, bright things, we need to have this. And now, when hindsight's 20/20, look, dude, they have surrendered all their draft picks until 2031. You think the Clippers got it bad, right? You got a 36-year-old Kevin Durant, a Booker, and a Beal. Think when Kevin Durant ain't there and it's like, shit, I'm stuck with Booker and Beal. Like, you just need way more pieces, man. And bench players are huge. I love Royce O'Neal, right? Like, I will take Royce on my team any day of the week. He's on my all, give me that guy on my team. But Royce, again, add him to the list. Is Isaiah Thomas, Grayson Allen, and Royce O'Neal, are they going to be the saviors? They're not. And I remember we had a conversation on our pod a couple weeks ago when I asked you if there was a path for them to even win a championship, and you said there, of course, there is a path if these guys are just elite offensively every single night. But it's not looking like that. And you have to, in order to be elite offensively, you have to have an elite offense to create that kind of stuff. And I don't think they do. I just really think it's more my turn, your turn. Okay, now it's me. Even Vogel, he's a great coach, man. But I just don't see it, dude. I'll be surprised if these guys win a game. That's how crazy I'm feeling about Minnesota right now. And I want to bring up Minnesota's fans. Look, Phoenix is coming home. It's always better to play at home. But those mini fans were electric last night.
Yeah.
And just the swag that Ant has is enough to get that place popping, dude. And I was just really impressed. Minnesota, when they're – and Ant didn't have a good game. Ant had 15 points. So when your best player
– 3 of 12.
Three of 12. But you know what I saw him doing? He was extremely engaged on defense. He was hyped on the bench when Conley and when Alexander Walker was getting buckets. Everything he said about Jaden – this is when players become, you know – paid players. Jaden McDaniels is becoming a paid ass player. And wasn't he the dumb one last year that broke his wrist or 2 years ago broke his wrist after socking the wall?
Punched the wall.
Was it last year? Yeah. Was it 2 years
ago? That was last year. That was last year.
And, you know, I think he's maturing a little bit more, but they got swag, bro. They got something about them that, like I said earlier, they just don't give a shit about who they're playing. And honestly, I think Ant wants to destroy his idol.
Yeah. From the Phoenix's perspective, this is a game that they really should have won, right? They're only able to put up 93 points. But in this game, Anthony Edwards, 15 points, 3 of 12. We just talked about that. Karl Anthony Towns, 12 points, 3 for 7. Naz Reid, 5 points, 1 for 5. That is a game that the Suns need to win because that shit ain't going to happen again. Not all three of those guys are going to be that ice cold and you know, just a little bit off their game offensively like that. So there is, you know, the sweep, get the broom ready because it feels like a sweep is coming. But I want to just highlight a couple other things. I mean, McDaniel said the 25 for Minnesota, 8 rebounds as well. But Anthony Edwards, 8 assists. 8 assists is a really, really solid number for your on ball, like out and out best scorer on the team to be like, no, you know, I'm going to facilitate. Like maybe I don't have it tonight. Right. I'm going to cap it at 12 shots. I'm not going to take 25 shots and be 6 for 25. I'm going to be 3 for 12 and dime out to everybody else that's hidden because Gobert had 18, Conley big 18 points, and then Nikhil Alexander-Walker 10 points off the bench. So I think it just speaks to like I was talking a little bit about there, like Phoenix doesn't have the belief. Minnesota has the belief right now. I think every single one of those guys goes, okay, if it's not me, then I trust I trust my guy over here and he's going to hit that shot or he's going to make the right decision. And if, you know, if they were down at halftime, there's no like, oh shit, I guess we don't have it tonight. No, they came right back out. Boom. Up by 8 at the end of the third quarter. So I think that's a, or, you know, it wasn't up by, but they got into the lead by the end of the third quarter is what I was trying to say. They won the third quarter by 8 points. But, massive difference, I think, in just general approach and feel for both of these teams. All the momentum is on Minnesota's side, and they're grasping, you know, their chance right now. And I don't think that they've ever been scared of this Phoenix Suns team. No. Even though I thought they might be a little bit scared when I was calling this series in the preview, I was like, man, I think the Suns could maybe get something out of this. I looked like I was way wrong. I mean, I still pick Minnesota, by the way. I picked Minnesota. I think I picked them in 6, but I thought it was going to be 6, and it doesn't feel like it's going to be 6.
You know, you brought up the 8 dimes by Anthony Edwards. That's the maturity factor. Like, this guy's maturing in front of our face, and that's, you know, one of the things that we discussed when he got drafted was his questionable maturity, and I think he's seeing it. And I just think your team normally takes on the personality of your best player, right? And Anthony Edwards' personality is like, fuck it. You know, like, let's go out and ball these guys out. We're better than them. And I love that. So I want to say one last thing about this game.
Sure.
And it's something that rubbed me really the wrong way. And you know, Minnesota tends to rub me the wrong way, but I think this, and I don't know the context. So before I go all Allen Iverson statue on this, I don't necessarily know the context, but there was a play last night. I think it was in the end of the third quarter or beginning of the fourth, where Bradley Beal took it to the rack and Anthony Edwards beat that shit up, beat it right back. Right. And then immediately following that, you see Zach Zarba, the official, give Anthony Edwards a dap, like a legit dap, high five. And I don't like that one bit. This is not the climate to be doing any of that in. There should be no personal relationships between an official and a player. I don't know what happened. I don't know if Zach was apologizing for something, but I ain't never Ain't never. There ain't been a nail nutter time. Don't nobody say that nail nutter like you say that nail nutter. There ain't been a nail nutter time that I've seen an official dap up a player after a play. Am I wrong, Drew? Am I wrong about this? Because that shit didn't look right.
I only saw the clip. I didn't actually catch it live when it was happening, but I saw the clip circulate on social media and I didn't dissect it. I kind of just thought it was funny and let it be. The way that I saw it was I thought Zarba was asking for something or like, you know, pointing in the direction, and then Ant just dapped him up. I think that is how I viewed it, was like Ant just was like, oh, that's a hand. I'm going to go in for the handshake. And then Zarba finishes the handshake. He doesn't like, you know, pull his hand back or something like that. But I could be wrong. I only looked at it for a quick moment and I had a little chuckle.
I'm rewatching it right now.
Okay.
I'm rewatching it right now. No, Zarba puts out his hand and Ant daps him. I don't know, bro. Just going off of like,
I think was he asking for the ball? Was he saying like, give me that ball, and then Ant just turned it into a handshake?
Zarba's got the rock. Zarba's got the rock on him. I don't know.
Okay.
This is, again, wrong climate, a la Jonte Porter, a la Tim Donaghy. We don't need to see people broing. I don't need to see refs broing out with players. I just don't think it's a good look. There needs to be a line in the sand because it looks like they're homies, right?
Right.
We're all good.
Right.
And then when you think
couldn't agree more that the optics are not good. Definitely not good.
Especially, Drew, when I think, you know, Adam Silver and us as fans and just the NBA community in general is kind of looking. There's been all this MJ talk. Ann Edwards is MJ, the next MJ. Ann Edwards is good looking. He's got a great smile. He's charismatic. He's funny. He's got highlights. Like, he ain't Ja Morant. You know what I mean? He ain't Luka. Like, this guy's his own dude. And when you're becoming the face of the NBA, it just doesn't look right. You know, you can't have the refs dapping you up after a dope play. Okay. It looked like Zach Zarba was a fan. Like, hey man, nice block. You feel me?
No, I mean, you're right. You're okay. Right. I think there needs to be maybe a probing question. I wonder if somebody got to the bottom of that and we just haven't found out yet, but yeah, that did look odd. I gotta be honest. I thought it was innocent, but now that you've rewatched it and you're seeing it like that, I thought maybe there is something weird about that.
It looked like they were homies and ain't seen each other in a minute. Like, what's up, kid? Hey, good to see you. Right after a huge play. And again, I'd love to get to the bottom of it, but guess who can't talk about anything regarding referees? The referees. Zach Zarba can't speak. He can't give a statement about what really went on. And if Ant Edwards and Zach Zarba are homies, and Edwards ain't going to say nothing negative about Zach. You got to get those NBA officials. Zach Zarba will be in the finals. He will be in the semifinals. He'll be all over the place. Really bad luck, right, man. That's all I got to say. Let's get into New York and Philly, because this has been a crazy-ass series. This has been absolutely wild. New York Knicks up 2-0. That game, too, was one of the best games I'd ever seen in a long time. Our boy Boston Ben was in the building for that DiVincenzo three to win the game. Some weird stuff's going on. Speaking about officials, you know, that last play of the game, and I know you and I got to talk about it off of the air, but, you know, the referees really freaking messed up. Look, the NBA says Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart should have been called for fouls on Tyrese Maxey in the 76ers inbound play with 27 seconds left. The sequence led to Dante hitting the three-pointer that gave the Knicks a 102-101 lead with 13 seconds to play. The last two-minute report out of the Sixers and Knicks, listen to this, Drew. Ananobi should have been called for a defensive 3 seconds. Embiid should have been called for a foul on DiVincenzo. Brunson and Hart both were not called for fouls on Maxey. Nurse should have been granted a timeout. What the fuck are you doing, NBA referees? What are we doing? Why? And dude, if I'm Philly, I'm pissed. Joel Embiid said that loss was worse than the loss of Kawhi Leonard. I think that's a bit dramatic. There is no way that loss was worse than that. Can we agree?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, there's nothing more heart-wrenching than the Kawhi shot to end your season.
Joel, you cried after that game. There is no way.
Yeah, bro. Like,
I would be frustrated with it. But look, after what the bullet points I just gave you about the final 2 minutes, that is a lot of blown calls or no calls. And that shit cannot happen in the NBA playoffs. And look, you know, you and I went over the play a couple times. I didn't see a foul on Hart, on Maxi. You know, when you watch it in slow motion again, the glaring thing is the Nick Nurse timeout. It is blatantly obvious that Nick Nurse called a timeout once Maxi was taking the ball out of bounds. It is your job as an NBA referee to be cognizant of the time and what's going on. And most of the time, 98, 99% of the time in that situation, the opposing team's coach is going to be calling a timeout. And Nick Nurse was calling that timeout. And the fact that you ignored him or weren't looking at him means you're not doing your job. Everything I just said, one of those is okay, Drew. Like, okay, maybe OG should have been called for defensive 3 seconds. One of those you could possibly miss. But four or five of these, I'm sorry, bro. If I'm Joel, I'm pissed too.
Well, let me just say this. This goes back to like the whole idea that I brought up earlier about the referees have completely changed the way that they've reffed the games going back to the All-Star break. But now it's even like next level. Like every one of these games, there's missed calls, a lot of missed calls. There's a lot of physicality, a lot of contact there. And I'm not going to be complaining about that because I think it actually makes for a better, more competitive, productive basketball game and a better viewing experience for the most part. But in this scenario, it feels like all the refs just were like, you know what? I'm not going to decide this game or whatever it is. And by saying we're not going to decide the game, you end up deciding the game, right? Like, because you don't blow the whistle when you're supposed to. There was so much on that last play, but even, you know, going in like before that, like, in this series in particular, but game two of that Sixers Knicks game, like every drive to the rim was met with some physical, like, you know, some defensive physicality, and every single one of those drives to the basket missed or made probably could have been and one or foul calls. There's a good chance that if the refs were sticking to the book of how they were calling it in the beginning, first half of the season, that six people were ejected in that game. Just from losing, not ejected from technical fouls, but ejected because they used all six of their fouls and were, you know, no longer eligible to play. So I think when you start the game with that sort of physical contact, it's really difficult to get a hold on it and bring it back down to like a more realistic level of contact that you should expect. And then it leads to this play at the end of the game where none of the refs are blowing their whistle. I mean, honestly, dude, Maxi pushes off of Josh Hart. You could have called that an offensive foul. He gets the ball in bounds. Brunson definitely takes a swipe. Hart takes a swipe. Could have called one of those. He falls to the ground. That's a travel. Could have called a travel. All the while, Nurse is calling timeout. Could have called a timeout.
Right.
And then, of course, Josh Hart rips the ball out of his hands, and it leads to the first shot from Dante, Brick, rebound, second shot from Dante, cash. So, look, I think it made for incredible, like, again, non-Knicks or Sixers fan, I was loving watching that because it was just pure chaos. Mm-hmm. But it felt a lot like a March Madness game in college where the refs don't know what the hell they're doing half the time and they're just completely out of place. Not an NBA where it's supposed to be the top officials in the game, sort of a basketball game. So I think obviously that team missed a lot given the last 2 minute report. I wonder if they would even consider doing a full game report. I don't know if they do that, but you'd have to get a lot of ink in those printers to print out a full game report of what was missed from those referees throughout that whole game too.
It doesn't matter anymore. A post game report,
2 minute report. Yeah.
In the playoffs, you know, you're talking, it could have been 1-1, you know, instead of being down 2-0 and going home. So I understand Embiid's frustration. I understand Nick Nurse's frustration. And it could have turned out the same way. Knicks could have won the game anyways if they got the calls that they were supposed to get. I'm just saying you can't have this many mishaps at the end of a ball game, a playoff ball game. You cannot. Because if that's in Philly and that shit happened, dude, people are storming. Like, refs are hurt. Like that's what's happening.
Yeah. I'll be very interested to see what the reception for the referees are in Philly in game three. But you know, I have to say, like, Joel and Maxi really almost probably should have walked out of that game with a victory. Those guys were incredible for Philly, and that's probably why it hurts even more. Both guys questionable before the game. Maxie dealing, that was the Maxie's flu game right there, or whatever version, cold, sinus flu, whatever he's got going on. That was an incredible performance coming off of being actually sick and not able to perform at the shoot around the day before. Joel Embiid had that weird knee tweak after the awesome off the backboard yammy in game one. And then, you know, he comes out and was looking pretty solid throughout the entire game, and not even, you know, not even pretty solid, like towards the end there was looking fantastic. But to me, the more interesting thing about this, and it sucks that we have this kind of asterisk, or, you know, this kind of confusion about whether or not the Knicks should have won game two, is that the Knicks themselves have had pretty underwhelming performances, especially from Jalen Brunson, who has not been shooting very well. The Philly's defense, a lot of talk is about the Knicks defense. Philly's defense on Brunson has been awesome. They are all over this guy. They're not letting him get good shots. And Brunson, of course, is also just missing some good ones. But for the Knicks, it's all about DiVincenzo, McBride, and Bogdanović, who's stepping up out of nowhere in this postseason. Bogdanović is having finally some success on the offensive end, and is playing pretty good on both sides of the floor. But, you know, in a series where it's 2-0 to the Knicks, but Brunson has been poor, and Joel and Maxey have been excellent, you would assume that it's not 2-0 to the Knicks, right? You would just assume that it's going to be at least 1-1, if not 2-0 to the Sixers going back home. So I totally understand, especially a pivotal game two like that. I understand everyone's complaints from the Philadelphia 76ers side. But, you know, at this point, there's nothing else to say other than they got it wrong. And it's still, like your point, which I think is a very valid one, it still could have resulted in a Knicks victory, right? It may not have just been that. There was plenty of time on the clock, you know, during that whole DiVincenzo double shot, you know, take there. And who knows what would have happened. So I feel for the Sixers, but I think this maybe what this does is this really fires them up for game three. And I'd love to see it be evened up 2-2 going back to MSG. I want to see more of this MSG and the rivalry between the Knicks and the Sixers that is historic go on as long as possible. I'd love to see a seven-game series out of this.
I'm glad you brought up the other guys on the Knicks, because I really love this Knicks team. And, you know, it came out this week that the players, for the third year in a row, the NBA players that aren't New York Knicks, voted Tom Thibodeau, the guy, the coach we would least want to play for. And I'm really stoked that DiVincenzo and Josh Hart went to bat for him, because they're like, yo, these guys aren't in the locker room. Look, Tibbs has brought together this group of players and gotten them to play at such a high level. You look at the Josh Harts and the DiVincenzos and the Hartensteins and the McBrides and the Bogdanoviches and all the, this is, when you name those names, you're not like, oh, these guys are going to be great. Nah, dude, it's a group of really good players that know their role. Hartenstein won. I hate saying his name like that too. I hate saying Hartenstein. It's Hartenstein. Okay. I'm calling him Isaiah Hartenstein. He's the one, the reason why they won that game. He has been absolutely phenomenal for them. I loved him as a Clipper. He's great as a Knick. These guys are going to do damage once Brunson gets, you know, his vibe back or whatever the hell it is. But these guys are all really great players that have bought in to a coach. You have to let coaches coach you. The reason why they don't like Tibbs is because he runs practices where you actually practice and you run fundamentals and learn defenses and shit like that. That's why players don't want to play for him. But look how successful they are. He's turning, I don't want to say ragtag, because they're not ragtag, but they're, when you name those names, they're not jumping off the board at you. Jalen Brunson is going to get MVP votes. You know what I'm saying? Josh Hart will get a payday from anybody. Everybody needs a Josh Hart on their team. Everybody needs a Hartenstein on their team. I'll take him any day of the week. So big, I'm cheering for the Knicks.
I'm glad you brought up our German friend, Hartenstein, and Josh Hart. Josh Hart played every second of game two. 48
as usual.
Minutes.
As usual.
21 points, 15 rebounds for Josh Hart.
Right.
And people may not understand this when you look at him, because he's a big guy, and I think it's hard to get, you know, frame of reference if you're not familiar. Josh Hart is my size. He is 6'4". Okay. And he's doing this on the floor with a Joel Embiid, 7'1", 300 pounder. Yep. And a Tobias Harris, 6'10", right? And all these other guys that should be, you know, Kelly Oubre, 6'9", right? And Josh Hart, with the most aptly last, you know, aptly named man on the planet, 21-15 for a 6'4" power forward. That's it. Those are Westbrook makes no numbers. Sense.
Those are Westbrook numbers. Yes. Westbrook is 6'4". Yeah. It's all about wanting to rebound. You have to want the rock. And Josh Hart does everything. Tibbs has said it many times. The reason why he plays 44 minutes a night is because he does all the right things. He's conditioned enough and he wants to be out there. I want him out there for 40 minutes, which is insane. So big ups to them. I want to say one really quick thing. It's more of a question, Drew. Like all in right. that game one, when Embiid took that fall after he dunked, right?
Yeah.
He was laying on the ground and they did a close up of his face. And I remember looking at his face and he was doing this shit with his eyes, right? I thought he was concussed immediately.
Same.
I thought he was concussed. He looked really odd. Our boy douchebag John hit me up. He's like, Clips, you were right. It's too soon to bring back Embiid. And I'm like, I think it is too. I don't think he's ready. I think the knee's going to go at any minute, dude. Do you agree? Just yes or no. Do you agree with me on this?
I mean, every time there's a stumble, anytime that anything happens, I'm like, oh, there it is. Out for a year.
You cannot tell me that knee is ready to be playing. It is not. And I'm not trying to jinx him. I'm not trying to give the Clips and Drew jinx. But he's playing through whatever pain he's doing. But look, it looked like he was concussed. And then the other night at the free throw line, and I posted it on our page, the guy had a freaking Mr. Deeds crazy eyes moment, reptilian-like. What was going on with that? I don't know what's going on. You know the crazy eyes from Mr. Deeds?
I know it very well, yeah.
That is what Embiid looked like. Well, I don't know what's going on neurologically. I don't know what's going on neurologically up there, but that did that look weird to you too?
Yes. Yeah. It was almost, you know, he had like the way that I saw the post was he had like one of his eyes was like twitching and then the other eye was just like wandering. It was way over on the side. It almost looked like a robot, like what you would see a robot look like if it was kind of like trying, you know, we have these things like out of Japan. I see them all the time randomly on my Instagram feed where it's like a fake human head. Uh-huh. And sometimes it does like a little, you know, crazy eyes thing that's going on. That's immediately what came to my mind. But I like the Steve Buscemi call from Mr. Deeds.
Did they clone Joel? Look, you're talking to a guy that has neurological issues. That's how they discovered my MS. It was from what was going on with my eyes. And when things aren't working with your eyes, it means it's not communicating with your brain. And I don't know. We've been watching Joel Embiid for a decade, dude. And I ain't seen nothing like that. So I think it's a cause for concern a little bit. I hope they didn't clone Joel. I know we're spending a lot of time on this, but we're not the only ones that saw that. Drew, give us a quick rundown of the rest of what's going on. I know we got Indiana tied up with the Bucks 1-1. Siakam had a great night last night. Dame had another good game. Siakam had 21 in the first half. Dame had 26 in the first half. Siakam ends up with 37. Crazy thing about this game, that both teams combined for 29 for 68 for threes, 68 three-pointers in the game, just jacking. But Indiana pulled out one. They're going back home here in a minute. They should be feeling good. But give us a quick breakdown of I know you have a lot to say about Cleveland-Orlando. It's just the most boring. It's the most boring
series. I'll keep it brief for that because there's not – I mean, unfortunately for my Magic, there's not a lot of Magic happening on the
court. I like the Magic too.
Yeah. But look, this Bucks series and Pacers series, which is what we're going to talk about right now, is going kind of the way – game two was kind of the way I expected this series to go. Game one was a little bit like, oh, no, I may have made the wrong pick here. But game two went almost perfectly like I would expect, you know, 125 points for the Pacers, 108 for the Bucks. That's kind of like what the whole season matchups were, virtually some version of that, in which I think the Pacers won 4 out of 5. Obviously, Siakam in game two was fantastic. Damian was the reason that the Bucks won game one, Damian Lillard. But and you know, his heroics just weren't enough in game two. If I'm a Bucks fan, I'm still being like, where is Chris? Can we clone Chris Middleton? Like, we're going by the clones. Can we get a different version of Chris Middleton in our lineup? Because that guy really, especially right now, they really need him to step up, and he's just not really doing that for them. But on the flip side, for the Pacers, game two, Nembhard, man, this kid's another guy. Tibbs should pluck him right out of the Pacers if he possibly can, and put him on the Knicks, because he's another one of these guys. He's in Dame's ass the whole night, following him around in his jersey all night. And then he comes out because he's exhausted, because he needs a breather. And TJ McConnell's stepping right in and trying to do his best on Dame as well. And Dame, obviously, he's so good. 34 points, still really solid. 10 of 21, 6 of 13 from three. That's really good. You can't really ask a lot more of Damian Lillard, you know, as a scorer and a playmaker for this team. He also had 5 assists. I think the problem that you know, is an obvious problem is without Giannis, I think the team is lacking a little bit of identity on the offensive end. You're asking Brook Lopez to take, you know, more shots than he's used to taking. Bobby Portis, way more shots than he's used to taking. It took 16 in this game, Bobby Portis did, and was 6 of 16 for 14 points. And Bobby, you know, he didn't have a bad game, but you can see that, like, at times when I'm watching both of these games, Milwaukee's like, all right, well, now what do we do? What are we running now? And then Brook Lopez, the more you can get Brook Lopez in a pick and roll where he's actually not popping, but he's rolling, the better that is for the opponent, because he doesn't like to put the ball on the ground. Right. He's not really finishing at the rim with a lot of force or thunder. He actually took one or two floaters from like the top of the key, from the free throw line area. All of that works in favor of the Pacers when they can get that thing happening there. So I expect the Pacers to continue to roll like this. You know, I don't necessarily expect Nembhard to go 8 of 11 again and be that sort of efficient. Nor do I expect Siakam to be 16 of 23 and score 37 points the whole rest of the series. But I do think this is kind of the rhythm that we've seen the Pacers play with this whole season. And I think they will continue to do that. And I think the Bucks will continue to struggle to stop them.
All right, give us your takes on the series that nobody seems to care about. We really, going into the playoffs, I was really excited about this series, and then I find myself not even watching it just because there's so much going on. Orlando and Cleveland up 2-0 on our boys. I saw Suggs go down with like this hyperextended knee. He had to get carried off the court. I'm like, dude, it's a wrap for him. And then he ended up coming back and playing the rest of the game. But give us your takeaway from Orlando, Cleveland, Drew.
This one's really, I mean, it's pretty simple. The Magic are not making shots. You know, a lot of this game, all the analysis that we like to give, it's a lot of times it can be just as simple as this team is not able to put the fucking ball in the hoop. And this is what we're running into with Orlando. They are just ice cold from three in both of the games that they've played. And the Cavs are obviously they're also playing a pretty solid defensive team in the Cavs, right? Mm-hmm. It's a combination of they're having to take some pretty tough shots, but even the open shots that they're getting, they are just not hitting, bro. So I am a little bummed out because I was rooting for this Magic team.
Me too.
And 83 points in game one and 86 points in game two. Not getting it done, man. That is never going to get it done in today's NBA. You know, maybe you're playing against the Pistons in 03. Okay. Maybe 86 gets it done. Not in today's NBA. And, you know, I obviously the big takeaway from this game, from this series, Donovan Mitchell is clearly head and shoulders the best player on the floor at all times. At all times. And we're waiting for Paolo to develop, you know, even more and become even more confident and more skilled and have more three, you know, more levels to his scoring. Right now, I think he's a two-level scorer at best. But he's not there yet, man. He is not. He's nowhere near as good as Donovan Mitchell is. And that dude, as good as the defense is for the Magic, Jalen Suggs, Jonathan Isaac, it does not matter who is guarding Donovan Mitchell. He is in great rhythm. And
Garland was great in that game too, though.
Garland is fantastic. Evan Mobley hitting jump shot. I mean, in game one, I think Evan Mobley had like three threes in the first half. It might have been game two. I'm maybe mixing them up, but goddamn, I'm watching a lot of basketball right now, so it's hard to keep which game which at the moment. But Mobley hitting threes is always going to be a huge plus for this Cavs team. And you know, I think even when Moritz Wagner, when he comes in, he's like a bash brother right now. He's trying to wake his team up by being super physical. So he's getting into it with Niang every time that he can. He's getting into it with Okoro every time that he can. And sometimes it works. And I think he's trying everything he can to like, can we get fired up? Like, you know, can we act like we want to be here? Can we act like we can, you know, we're confident enough to win the game in this series?
Mo's like the frat guy football player playing in the rec league. You know what I mean? Just hopping on the court like, all right, dude, I'm going right at this guy. That bang out on Jarrett was crazy. The behind the back bang out, that was nasty. But you're right. Mo is just wild. He's trying to pick fights with everybody to get him amped. I think Cleveland is just as long as Orlando. When you have Mobley and Jarrett and Okoro and all these long-ass dudes, I think you said it perfectly, though. Paolo and those young cats are just not ready. We were excited for them. They have zero playoff experience, any of them. Another one of those teams where it's like, please name a player that has playoff experience on that team. And don't say Mo Wagner with the Lakers, because I don't think he plays. Is he the only one? I mean,
we did this on the last one. It's Gary Harris Joe Ingles. Those are the guys. Those are the guys that have any sort of real playoff experience. And even, you know, even that, it's relatively minimal. Joe has been a part of some pretty good Utah teams, and Gary was on some pretty good Denver teams, but, you know, certainly not stars. And Joe Ingles had, you know, 1 point in game one. So he's obviously not a difference maker at the moment. But, you know, I want to say this, though. Given all of that, Paolo is still performing quite well. And again, I still think he's ahead of schedule. Paolo Banchero is. And this is great reps. Really great reps for Paolo to see what an atmosphere is like. Cleveland is a fantastic a fan base there. When things are going right, they're a really good fan base, and they cheer on their team. They get nice and loud. So just to chalk this up as like, cool, we'll get at least four games of playoff experience for this unit, this whole roster, is going to be a positive thing. I think it'll be massive if they can get a win. I mean, damn, can they score? Can they score 95 points in a game and maybe squeak a win out? That would be awesome to watch that happen. But right now, it doesn't look like it's in the cards. I might eat some words on this particular, you know, series, because I was riding with them all the way, and potentially with the Pacers as well. But I'm still rooting for both of those teams. Let's go Pacers. Let's go Magic. I think we can do something here a little bit.
I'm rooting for both those guys too. We have no skin in the game, dude. Like, we don't love either one of those teams. But I, even right now with the Magic, give me one. Get one dub in these playoffs.
Let's get a win.
And it's a win. It's clearly obvious, though, that Cleveland's a better team. And I think the reason why we took the Magic is because we like everybody on that team. And towards the end of the season, of the regular season, Cleveland was shit in the bed. So we're like, they're not going to go into the playoffs. And we forget that Donovan Mitchell is a fantastic playoff basketball player. And, you know, I love
so good.
He's so good, man. He's so good. And when you have Garland, and all we've been asking of Evan Mobley was like, can this guy get a jumper? Can he get a floater? Can he do something with
it? Starting to happen.
It's starting to happen. So good things happening. Do I think Cleveland's going to win a chip? I don't. Do I think Orlando's going to win a chip? I don't. But get one dub, Orlando. Get one.
I think, like we talked a little bit about in the last podcast, this team will benefit massively from some individual guard score. Right now, they like Cole Anthony is kind of like sometimes who they go to maybe get a little streaky. He had 0 points in game two. He had 4 points in game one. Yep. So, and Cole really, you know, if they're going to have success when he comes in, he's got to fire them up. He's got to be the little bit like the microwave, right? It's got to be kind of like that, where he's taking good shots and making them. And he's also just been really quite bad in this series. So across the board, it just would be nice to see them make a couple shots.
Do you want to get anything in on your Lakers? I know we did a couple reaction videos to the Laker games. Again, here's a plug for our YouTube. If you want to hear or watch us a little bit. We've been doing reaction videos for the Lakers and for the Clippers. They're up on YouTube right now, along with our shorts and our semi-long form content that we put up there. We're just trying to get our base going. So if you guys listen to the show, give us a minute and click our follow-through link and join us on YouTube, because that's what we're trying to do. Drew, game three coming up. Lakers down 2-0. What are you going to do?
It would be nice for us to make sure we're featuring Anthony Davis at least 5 times per quarter in the post. And this has been the major problem, as you've outlined. I went in depth coverage of games 1 and 2 on my Lakers and their performances. Game 2 ended with just a heartbreaking comeback victory for the Nuggets, with Jamal Murray hitting that incredible step back over Anthony Davis. But really, the overarching theme for this series is the Lakers are right there with the Nuggets step for step up until sometime in the third or fourth quarter, when we stop doing the things that got us to be in the lead in these games. It's almost a little bit of a rope-a-dope from the Nuggets, and I kind of like that strategy from them. It's like, okay, cool. Especially, you know, I'll say it right now. It's the only time I'm going to say it, especially with the altitude. They're almost like, cool, let's let these guys get all fired up. Let's get them all fired up. They're gonna waste all their energy. They're gonna waste all their energy in this first half. They're gonna get exhausted by the end of the game, and we're gonna be ready to go. We can play for another game if we want to. We got lungs for days. But I think that might be a little bit of the strategy for the Nuggets. I mean, dude, we were up by 20 on them in this game too, and we just went off the rails. So if you want more in-depth coverage, please go check out our YouTube videos. We put in a lot of effort and time into those videos. I think I've done a really good job of breaking down, you know, what I'm seeing from the Lakers going wrong. But, you know, I'm wearing this shirt for those that will be able to see. I got Magic Johnson pouring out a bottle of champagne. Normally people would view this as a championship sort of move. I'm wearing this shirt because he's pouring out a champagne for the death of this season.
For the homies.
You know,
it's for the homies.
It's pouring one out for the homies. It's the death of the season. We can't win this. We cannot beat this team, man. Unfortunately, that's just how it feels. And I will gladly be wrong on this if we come storming back and win, you know, the next 4 out of 5 games. But man, it's just not likely. It is really just not likely. We're probably not going to play much better than we did in these first 2 games. And we were almost perfect, Clips, for 2.5 quarters in game 2. Nearly a perfect game. And then we just stopped doing the things that were making it perfect. So big shout out to Jamal Murray. Massive shot. And again, what I'll say here is I appreciate the Lakers' effort and energy. That has not been a problem at all. It is our lack of concentration on offense and our lack of running plays to feature the guy who's been dominating when we get him the ball in Anthony Davis. So that's that.
For those that are new to listening to our show, Drew and I, every time Denver plays, there should be a drinking game called the altitude game, where anytime anybody plays against the Denver Nuggets, they always bring up the altitude, and Drew and I try our best to never bring that up. So Drew saying he's only bringing it up once is great. And the fact that you're heading back down to sea level, Drew, that could change a lot of things. You never know what can happen. So pour one out for the homies. Drew, let's do final thought for everybody. What do you got for us?
Sure. I'll just quickly say this. I'm excited for game 2 of this Oklahoma City Thunder New Orleans Pelicans game that's coming up later today. It's going to be like an hour and a half from right now. Game 1 was exciting. Game 1 was a dogfight. It was ugly, and it was down to the wire, and Oklahoma pulled it out. But I think this game 2, and I think generally speaking, this series is going to be a fun one to watch, and it's going to be a really good test of Oklahoma City in this very first round with the number 1 seed and with the home court advantage. So I'm excited for that series. We'll break that down in more detail on the next show. And then, of course, I think Boston, we don't even really need to mention them. I'm going to do it just because they are playing in a series as well. They're going to take care of business. They're going to take care of business in this series. Miami's still putting up a decent fight without Jimmy, but, you know, it's I mean, we can already pencil them into the next round. So my final thought is actually going back to the Nuggets and the Lakers tangentially. Jokic, the Joker, Nikola, is promoting a movie while all this is happening, Clips. And it's taking me by surprise a little bit because he's leaning into a little bit of a comic relief kind of a factor here where he's promoting the new Despicable Me movie where he's wearing clothes to look and emulate the main character, Gru, which is just insane and incredible all in the same thing, right? And I'm only bringing this up because how can you not love Nikola Jokic? I'm going against him and he's the bane of my existence. And I'm like, this guy is awesome. His commercials have been hilarious. The ones that they've been doing with him and Peyton Watson. And I think maybe other members of the Nuggets, but for this guy to be like, yeah, we got Lakers coming up, round one. Sure. Yeah. Let's still run the promo where I look like a freaking cartoon character, an unattractive cartoon character at that. And I'll totally lean into it. I'll show up, you know, dressed like this guy before the pregame and all this stuff. So it's a small, stupid final thought. But man, do I love this guy.
It's hard not to like him. And he's so on brand with everything that he's doing. He's, like you said, leaning into his character and his personality. And they debuted that commercial the night he showed up to the arena wearing the scarf where everybody was saying, you look like this guy. And then lo and behold, there's a commercial promoting the movie looking like this guy. It's just perfect. And I don't think he's doing anything. He's not trying to be anything he's not. He's just being himself. Right. And it's hard not to like that guy. And then what's crazy is he is that guy. And then his brothers are acting a fool in the stands, just beating people's asses. Like, can you believe this? These guys go back to Keeping Up with the Jokic's, a segment we did a while ago. How wild these last guys year. Are. Another group of dudes who DGAF at all. And to be fair, we all saw the punch he threw, Big Boy threw. I can't pronounce his first name, but just Jokic brother. Homeboy ate that shit. That took the sock in the mouth. He ate it.
I couldn't believe he was standing. Grabbed He's his just, coat. He just like kept standing there. Yeah.
Grabbed his coat and got on out of there. You got an iron chin, my friend. Like, that was impressive. Bravo. And homeboy's going to get some money out of it too. That will be settled out of court. But like, just for everybody going to these games, if you're anywhere near the brothers, just, you know, calm down. Don't say anything wild because these dudes are about that life. And, you know, just be careful. I'm with you on that, dude. It's hard to like. Jokic is like Steph Curry, like Klay Thompson, if you don't like these guys, there's something wrong with you. That's what it is. It's you. If you don't like Joker, then you're absolutely wild. My final thought. It's something I read today, and it made a lot of sense. And it's kind of serious. And nothing's written in stone here, but we got Braun. And we got KD, both are down 0-2 in their respective series. We got Steph Curry, who's not even in a position in a series. And if everything plays out how we think it's going to play out with Phoenix not going on or the Lakers going on and Steph not being there, this would be the first time that neither one of them, KD, Braun, or Steph, has been in the semifinals since 2005. Wow. 2005, that not one of these guys have been in the finals, right? Or in the semifinals. I got chills saying that. You know I like to get chills when I say shit sometimes. It's two things. It's one, can we please, like, this team that they're putting together, this Olympic team that we got going into France, is going to be special. This is going to be a final hurrah for a lot of these guys. We are never going to see this again. We're talking about three legends in KD, Braun, and Steph that are generational players in their own right, people that we have grown up, watched their whole career, and we're seeing it at this precipice right now where the same way that Magic and Bird thought about Michael Jordan, like, goddamn, Jordan's coming in. Might be time for us to dip. We're seeing Anthony Edwards go against his idol and Kevin Durant, probably going to get the better of that series. We're seeing Joker go against LeBron, and he's you know, won that battle the past 10 times and won a chip. This Olympic team is going to be something really special. just something special that we need to pay attention to and just realize that this shit doesn't last forever. LeBron's not going to be here forever. Steph's not going to be here forever. And KD's not going to be here forever. So that's something to think about. And on the other side of this is exactly what I just said. These young bucks coming up, man, these old cats who are the old cats now are being pushed aside. And we're seeing the Lucas and the SGAs and the Anthony Edwardses and the Jokers and these guys. They're the next thing. They're the next legends that are being made right in front of our eyes. So let's just take a minute. And if this is it for LeBron and the Lakers, like a first round exit is nothing that he's going to be proud about. But it's just the way the game's going now, man. A lot of young talent in the NBA, a lot of dudes that, you know, aren't really don't care if you're my idol or not. I'm going to go at your throat and I want to win. So let's just be present in the moment of what's going on right now and be thankful that we were able to watch these guys for so long. And I'm talking like the series are over. LeBron can do LeBron things and win this series, which would be probably the most epic thing to ever happen in the world. KD, if they end up winning this series, I will be shocked. Absolutely shocked. Phoenix beats Minnesota. I just don't see that happening. So I just wanted to, 2005 was a long time ago, dog. Think about that. 2005. 19
years.
Shit. I'm a young buck, man. I'm a bartender in Santa Clarita. Just chicks were fishing a barrel. It was that easy. That's how long ago it has been since one of those guys ain't been in the semifinals.
2005, I was a sophomore in high school. So been a hot one. Been a hot one since then for sure. And it is cool to see the changing of the guard. You know, this happens, you know, kind of generationally. We've seen that with Magic and Larry when they, you know, both kind of ended their careers a little bit on the earlier side, you know, given the longevity that we've seen out of some of the superstars since then. You could say the same thing for, like, you know, the Kobe, KG, you know, that Shaq and those guys started to fade away. And it feels like now we're, and rightfully so, they're all getting up in their late 30s. LeBron's almost freaking 40 years old. Chris Paul, same thing. It is cool to see the changing of the guard, but it's even cool, a little bit more cooler to see the changing of the guard knowing that we're in really good hands, right? Because I think for some of those moments, especially, you know, maybe around that Bird and Magic time, it's like, okay, what is the league going to do? Like, how is this going to look? Who is going to be the stars? And now we have a plethora to choose from. You know, and not even mentioning the rookie, Victor Wembanyama, right? Yeah. So we got so much talent in this league. I'm excited because we're ripe for expansion. We're going to see two more teams enter into this league. There's a depth of talent like never before in the NBA and in basketball around the world globally. It's just an awesome, awesome time. And it will be sad to see these guys fade off whenever it is that they do. If that's next year or in 2 years or 5 years, whenever it is. It'll be sad to see them go, but we'll remember them fondly.
But also, I totally agree with everything you just said. It'll be special, the Olympics. That's what I'm saying. Seeing these guys all play together.
The last hurrah,
man. The Revengers, right? That's their names. And it's just going to be something really special. I'm really looking forward to it. If you are listening to our show right now, if you made it this far, again, take some time, drop us a review. If you're listening to us on Apple or Spotify, leave us some 5 stars. Take a minute to go over to YouTube, watch some of our videos, subscribe to our page. It doesn't take much. That's all we're asking for. We do a lot of content for everybody. We put out, this is our 320th podcast that we're putting out there. And we're rookies in the YouTube game, but we're getting better and better every week. We're going to be putting out more and more content. We appreciate everybody that's been following us on the way. But it's also the NBA playoffs. We got more podcasts coming for you. We got more reaction videos coming for you. Drew's going to be in Vegas for a couple days, but we're going to be back shortly. It is the follow through with Clips and Drew, and we're ghost.
You know what it is. You know where you're at. This is the follow through with Clips and Drew. What up?